warm heart of a down-home gal, somewhere in the warm heart of America. This is Prepare for Freedom, show number 17, coming to you live each Tuesday from 2 to 3 p.m. on the Inspiring Friends Network. You can find us online at www.prepareforfreedom.com and on Facebook at www.facebook.com/prepareforfreedom. My name is Sharon, and I'm your host for today's show. Let me now introduce you to my co-host and Two Cents producer, Billy Bob. Say hello, Billy Bob.
Well, hello, everybody. This is Billy Bob, and I'm looking to have a great day for a great show today. So I can say one thing. Let's get started.
All right. As you can see, Billy Bob is a raring to go for another show. You will be hearing more from him shortly, as Billy Bob loves to put in his 2 cents worth. Listen to Billy Bob long enough and keep adding up those 2 cents, and you will soon be rich. And now, on to the topic of the day, which is hidden handicaps and challenges. Have you got any hidden challenges today, Billy Bob?
Yeah, I got one for you.
What?
It's my bank account. It's empty.
That's really hidden. I wonder how many people out there can relate to that one. Okay, other than the bank account, now we are going to address a topic today that has a lot to do with freedom, maybe something you might not have thought of a whole lot before. And those are the kind of topics we love to explore, the ones you haven't thought of before. I'm a poet today and didn't know it, Billy Bob.
Oh, brother. It's going to be a good show, I can tell already.
Well, hopefully poetry is not one of my hidden handicaps. I hope it's an asset.
Well, it sounds pretty good so far, so you're on the right track.
All right. I guess I'm being inspired because the guest we're going to have on in the second half hour is a writer, and I know she's going to be listening to my every word to make sure that everything I say is absolutely grammatically correct, enunciated correctly, and if she's listening in, she's probably laughing just about right now.
Oh, she's one of the person that corrects you if you make a mistake, if you write something down?
Yeah, she's a professional fault finder. We're going to learn more about her the next half hour.
Man, I got a big handicap, Denim, because I sure can't write. She's going to find a lot of fault in me.
She must be in the right place, and so are you. Trust me, people, we're going to have a good show today. Going on to hidden handicaps. It's really easy to think of handicaps. There's golf handicaps, bowling handicaps, but no, we're not talking about those kind of handicaps. We're talking about handicaps that interfere with your freedom. That can be freedom to move. That can be freedom to live what might be called a more or less normal life. It might be freedom to learn. There are many handicaps related to the ability of a person to learn that we don't see, and we sometimes wind up judging a person incorrectly, thinking they're somehow retarded or something, when they have simply a learning disability that can be worked with, treated, and corrected. So we're going to invite you today to go on a little journey with us to explore some of the handicaps people might have that may not be immediately obvious. And I invite you to think as we go through this, if you may have possibly known such a person in your life, or there may be somebody in your family right now, or a neighbor or someone, perhaps you may have judged a little harshly, not understanding the kind of handicap they had. And the good news is that no matter what handicap a person may have, they can still enjoy freedom. That's the message we want to bring to you today, and we'll discuss more about how that can happen. But let's just start first by sharing some experiences that we've had. We are speaking not only off the top of our head, we're also speaking from some experiences in our own lives that have taught us a lot. They brought us some sadness, but they also taught us a lot. And I think Billy Bob had one he was going to start off with.
Who, me?
Yeah.
Oh, you're talking to me over here?
Yeah.
Well, I must be a handicap because I sure didn't pay attention to that.
I don't think sleeping is counted as a handicap.
It could be. But, you know, really, seriously, everybody does have a hidden handicap. Some people don't accept it. Some people do. You got to look at it and understand what they're going through. Like she said, some people can have a speech impairment. They got trouble speaking, or they're bashful. They're shy. They don't want to meet people. That's kind of like a hidden handicap because you don't notice it unless you pay attention to it. But some people have come over it and, in fact, made it very successful in their life. And they got more freedom of doing what they want to do. They can make better choices. Even me, I had some hidden handicaps and all. I still don't talk too much about it. In fact, I rarely do. But, you know, when I was just growing up, I just kept a lot of other things that was wrong with me, or we call handicap, because I knew people made fun of them. Just the way you walk, the way you talk, the way you look, the way you dress. You could dress different as a handicap because people think you don't know how to match colors.
Uh-huh. I've been there, done that one, yes.
Yeah, see, there's a lot of hidden, what you say, handicap because people don't look at it like that. And that's really wrong because everybody is, in a way, is handicapped to a certain point. And one of the biggest thing is somebody was talking to me earlier today, Sharon Woods and all, and brought up the word fear.
Yeah, we'll be discussing that one for sure.
Yeah. I mean, you know, because it seemed like fear is one of the biggest handicaps there is. Because you're afraid to venture out. You're afraid to say, well, people are going to make fun of me and say, I'm stupid, I'm crazy, I don't have no sense, whatever. But, you know, I've done that too. I've been down that road. People have said, well, I think you're really stupid if you do this or do that and all like this. And I listen to people. And finally, I had to break free and make my own decision whether it was right or not. I had to get over that fear.
Fear of what people are going to think. That's a big one.
Man, you ain't kidding. People will hurt you in more ways than you can even imagine. And it's not even right for people to do that, but they do it anyway. And, you know, I've learned that if you leave everything in the Lord's hands, the Lord will take care of everything. He will help you through your problems. He will help you solve things. He will be there to guide you. And now I just wonder why he put me on this radio show. Now I'm going to answer the question. Because, see, I was afraid at first when we did the first couple shows. I didn't think we were going to go anywhere with this show. I didn't think we could touch anybody with it. Well, we're on show, what, 17 now?
17.
Well, I've had a lot of people respond to us doing the show. Billy Bob has done quite well here, and Sharon has too in her own specialty. And we have grown and all, but we took the fear out, and we went forward with it.
Took that first step.
Yeah, we sure did. And now I'm going to hand this one over to Sharon because she got my curiosity up, and she said I probably ain't going to like what she had to say, but I want to hear it anyway. She said she has the questions for me that she looked up today by a writer.
Oh, yeah, right. Well, I think before I really get in your face with that one, Billy Bob.
I'm ready.
I bet you are. I just wanted to go down a path here briefly. I want you to think for a minute about some of the possible handicaps, hidden handicaps you may have experienced or have seen in people. They can be learning disabilities, ADD, stuttering, chronic depression, various things that can affect the mind's ability to function, abuse. We've been through some of these subjects in detail. Now, the important thing I'm feeling to share about this is that no matter what the disability, no matter what the handicap, whether it is an obvious, physically noticeable handicap or maybe a less noticeable handicap, there is one factor that is key, one thing that makes all the difference. There is a success story for every sad story. There's the guy in the wheelchair, for example, a complete quadriplegic. There's the one that goes off The Edge of the Cliff in Despair. There's the other one that becomes a successful motivational speaker. What's the difference? And I'm not going to say anything about whether the first man was better or worse than the second. That's not the question. But there was a difference. Some people cannot handle their handicaps. They go off the deep end. They commit suicide. They go into drug addictions, alcohol abuse, all kinds of incredible behavior to try and escape the pain that they're experiencing. That's one path you can go. But there is another path, and it involves choice. And we all have the power to make that choice. It has to do with what we decide to do with that thing called our mind, with our thoughts, with our attitude. And I can think of a man, I believe his name is John DeLynn, who had a chronic stuttering problem. He was made fun of by the kids in school. He was never going to get anywhere. He is now one of the top motivational speakers in the world. Yes, he has conquered his stuttering problem. It still is something he has to pay attention to. It's still a handicap he deals with, but he has broken free of its power. You mentioned somebody, Billy Bob, a couple of famous figures that you remember that had serious handicaps in their youth that have turned out to be quite notable figures. Can you remember a couple that you mentioned to me?
Yeah, Benjamin Franklin. He had a speech impairment, you know, but look, what did he accomplish? He didn't let that stop him. Even Einstein, he was so smart, he couldn't even hardly talk straight. But people looked at him and said, oh, he gets crazy and all like this. But look what he has accomplished because he put in his mind, I'm not going to let people put me down. And he went forward with life. And there are a lot of people who had handicap and actually has done something with their life instead of having the people feeling sorry for them, pity-patty and all. Well, let's look at two singers, Stevie Wonder, Ray Charles. I mean, look what they accomplished. They got a handicap, but you can say it. But in their mind, they're thinking, well, hey, I'm going to do something with it. I'm going to make it into a positive thing of what I can do with my life. And they broke away from that freedom of sitting around and they can't do nothing and feeling sorry for themselves and all like that. So they went out and did something about it. And they didn't hold any grudges against anybody because what they couldn't do and all. They showed everybody what they could do. And, you know, that's a major thing, like you said, in your mind. When you're growing up, if you want to set your goal in something, you can do anything you want. Whether you're handicapped, physically, mentally, you know, you can turn it around. You can make it something useful. Don't think you just because you've got imperative speaking or, you know, you're slow in thinking that you can't comprehend things faster than other people. Use it to your advantage.
Absolutely correct. Use it to your advantage.
And you'd be surprised of what you can accomplish. And all. I know a few friends that were like that. And even today, they're perfectly normal. But if you didn't know no better, you wouldn't think there was anything wrong with them.
Uh-huh.
But there is.
Mm-hmm.
But you just got to look for what it is and understand it. So you try to work with them and all. You know, little kids that are bashful or shy, you know, that's a handicap. But they don't know what you are like. But in a way, if they're keeping that shyness or being bashful, it'll be a handicap because then they don't know how to talk to people. They don't know how to go out in the world and face people. And see, you don't see that. Not unless you pay attention to it.
Right.
You know, I really am thankful for the Lord that has what he had done for me. He put me through a lot. A lot of things have happened to me, and I never understood why. But ever since I've done this radio show, I believe I have helped out a lot of other people. Because I can truly say I have walked in your shoes.
Mm-hmm. More shoes than you probably cared to walk in.
Probably you are correct on that. I still have problems pronouncing words. I'll tell you right now on the air. I mean, I have problems sometimes speaking. But if you don't pay attention to it, you don't know I'm handicapped.
Well, you don't make a big deal about it anymore either.
No, I just laugh it off and just try to rechange it and make a joke out of it and just go on with it.
Yeah.
So I try to turn a negative into a positive.
Right. And this is what a lot of people have done and can do. Now, we've talked about depression in the past. I don't want to go very deep there, but just to say that I've personally been in the place of diagnosed clinical depression. That's a very difficult place to be in when you're trying to experience any kind of freedom. It's like being in a big black hole with a grate over the top of it. There's no way out, it seems. And a lot of people let that get them to the point where they really don't see a way out, and they try to take their lives. For me, having been down the bottom of that hole and then having gotten the help I needed and the faith and everything else it took to get my thinking changed around, that's what we're getting to here. We're going to talk about changing your thinking. Getting my thinking changed around so that I could get past this and see the good in life and the good in me and the good that God saw in me. Now, whether you want to call it God or a higher power or whatever you want to call God, there still is something there that we are very much related to, a part of. And if we allow that to speak to our spirits, God will guide us. He will help us. We're not just thrown out here in this world to flounder around and whine and complain and die in misery. No. Before I get into my spiel that I promised, you got anything else you wanted to add at this point, Billy Bob?
Yes, I'm getting very, very, very annoyed over here.
Uh-oh.
And you know what's causing the annoyment? It's something you said. Is that, you know, people have a tendency of looking at everything, at their handicap, at their downfall.
Right.
And I get ignored with that because I've had my own share of handicaps. And I look at it like this, too. Like you said, you know, the Lord Jesus Christ, he can do anything he wants. He created us all different. In some way, he put us here on this earth. Don't blame something that might have happened to you that you can't control. Try to make it the best way you can. And I know some people that I go to church with that are handicapped. But do you know what? They will tell me to my face, if I want help, I'll ask for it. And somebody said, that being, you're not going to help them out if they fall down. Well, if I don't want them to get hurt, no. But if they fall down or they can't get up or do something, don't go rushing right to them. Let them ask you first. They don't want your pity. They just want to be treated like an equal.
Right.
They want to have their same kind of freedom that we have to move around.
Right.
And to do what we want to do in life. Start our own business. Go to school. Get a great education. Do anything that everybody else does.
Yeah.
But if they ask for your help, give it to them. But don't feel sorry for them. You should be more saying, I'm glad I'm not in that position, but then at the same time saying, hey, I can learn something from them as much as they can learn from something
right.
from me.
We all have something we can contribute and share with one another. No exceptions, in my humble opinion.
That's very true. Now I'm calmed down.
That's good. We do not want to get Billy Bob too upset. Now you know why we had Billy Bob. There is only one Billy Bob, and you just gotta love him. What else can you do? All right, on to my spiel.
I'm ready.
This is from a very well-known, internationally recognized speaker. His name is Steve Seibold. He has certainly overcome his share of challenges in his life, and he faces challenges every day. But he happened to put together a book, a fairly short book. It's called Secrets of the World Class: Turning Mediocrity into Greatness. And there's a brief portion of that book that I would like to quote and invite you to examine yourself as these questions get asked. Here's the question. How do you see yourself? Are you middle class or world class? This is a description that does not refer to your bank account. Think about it. Instead, it's how you approach the challenges you face. It's how you live your life. So, what really distinguishes the world-class performers from those who are satisfied with being good enough. Listen to these and see where you fit. The middle class is frustrated. The world class is grateful.
I can go along with grateful.
All right. The middle class competes. The world class creates. The middle class avoids risk. The world class manages risk. The middle class loves to be comfortable. The world class is comfortable being uncomfortable. Ooh.
Ooh, that sounds pretty good to me.
Uh-huh.
That sounds like a lot of people I know.
Mm-hmm. Moving right along. The middle class focuses on having. The world class focuses on being. The middle class has pipe dreams. The world class has vision. The middle class is problem-oriented. The world class is solution-oriented. The middle class sees itself as a victim. The world class sees itself as responsible. The middle class thinks it knows enough. The world class is eager to learn. And then here is the clincher. The middle class chooses fear. The world class chooses growth. So we've got two opposites here. The middle class chooses fear. When we choose fear, that causes us to shrink in fear. The very emotion of fear causes us to kind of shrink back, hesitate to move forward, fear to move forward. We shrink. On the other hand, the choice for growth is a choice for faith. We grow in faith. Fear and faith are opposites. Fear is the greatest single hidden handicap all of us have to one extent or the other. And the good news is it is completely reversible with practice, a lot of practice. Steve Seibold practices something called mental toughness. He teaches it, or at least he used to. I think he still does. It is actually training, reprogramming your thinking. We're getting our thinking programmed every day on the radio, TV, etc. It's already happening. So talking about programming your thinking, it's something already going on. The only difference is you're not in charge of it right now. You're just letting it happen to you. But there is a way to retrain, reprogram your thinking where you are in charge, and it moves you in the direction of freedom. Now, those are my words sticking in there. Those are not Steve's. But going back to Steve's words now. So if you are working towards peak performance, if you want to go from good to great, learn the secrets of champions, the secrets of the world class. It is those secrets that will take you on the journey back to freedom and get you there. And with that thought, any last thoughts, Billy Bob, before we end this? We need to get on with the next half an hour here and get our guest on.
Yeah, I'm going to make this short and sweet, or it could be sour. On how you take it. Do you know, out of all that he has read and what has been done, do you know if you want to really be in the world class by yourself, what he's saying, the right thing is to go in the right direction and all. Don't want to be in the middle class. Go forward. Get out of that thing. Take whatever talent you got, whatever you handicap you might think you have, turn around to a positive thing. Look, hey, I turned something in my life around, and I never expect me to do radio show, and look what happened to me. So I went from the middle class to the world class.
Well, you sure got a world class attitude about it.
Oh, you better believe it. I'm always smiling.
We joke about Billy Bob and his 2 cents making you rich. Well, you know, that's how it happens sometimes. It happens 2 cents at a time, 2 steps at a time. It doesn't necessarily happen overnight, but you keep going on that path where you are changing your attitude, changing your thoughts a little bit each day, working on it. Don't let your thoughts rule you. You can start ruling your thoughts, and you can make them serve you and turn you into a world-class thinker and doer. You can do that, and that is one of the ways that you can prepare for freedom. So we're going to move on now, And when we come back, we are going to have a world-class thinker, doer, and amazing lady that you will definitely want to meet, and we are looking forward to meeting her. Her name is Brenda Robinson, and we will be bringing her on after the break. So stick around. We are back with the second half of Prepare for Freedom, and we have an amazing lady we're going to introduce you to in just a minute. Her name is Brenda Robinson, and she is a professional writer, entrepreneur, speaker, very successful. She's an editorial consultant. She is a lady who has been through some amazing challenges in her life, including starting into a whole new field in her mid-50s. She has her own business now called Potent Pen, and she will be telling you more about that shortly. And she is a lady that if you want to learn how to write better, to speak better, to write your first book, whatever it is related to writing, and speaking, she is your person. We are thrilled to have her on the show. And just because we're rushed for time, I'm going to leave it with that without any further ado and welcome Brenda to the show. Hello, Brenda.
Hello, Sharon, and hello, Billy Bob, and thank you so much for having me.
We are delighted.
Yeah, I've been kind of curious about.
He's got a question for you.
Yes. Later on.
No, I think you're okay, Billy Bob.
I heard that you've been called a professional fault finder. How do you do that?
And get away with it.
Yeah, really. I want to know this. So I don't know.
Well, I don't always get away with it. The reason that one person in particular whose book I was working on, I was, as a friend, I was going through it for her and proofreading and editing it, but I wasn't charging her anything. It was just doing it as a favor. And I got about halfway through, and it was pretty heavy work. There were a lot of things that needed changing and correcting. And so I got through half of it, and I gave it back to her. And she said, well, you didn't do the whole thing. And I said, well, I am a professional editor, and I was just doing this as a favor. And she said, well, you just like to find fault.
I've been told that too.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
so.
I thought about that for a while, and I thought, well, it's true in a sense because I am finding things wrong, but I can't do my job unless I think of it this way, that I'm helping a good thing move into something better. And that's what I do. You know, I correct grammar and I change punctuation and I suggest. And I always try to only suggest because there's always reasons for things being worded a certain way or conversational way. But I suggest a sentence be switched around or changed if I think it will be better. But I never want to take away from the author's style or the author's sense of self. It's somebody else's book. It's not my book when I'm working on it, and I want it to remain theirs. So if they want to keep something that I think is absolutely icky, that's their prerogative, and I always work that way.
Boy, that's a fine line to walk, isn't it?
It can be, yeah, it can be. It's just gently suggesting something.
Well, you apparently know what you're doing because I understand you've been a professional book editor for just under 10 years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I also understand that this is a field that you kind of broke into. It was a challenge for you to break into it at the age you did. Looks like it didn't stop you. Would you like to tell us about how that worked?
Oh, sure. Well, for quite a while, I had different focuses as far as work. And then for a while there was no work, and I was a homemaker, and so that was a career in itself, raising a child. And for several years I was an actress, TV commercial and theater, and I also did PR for the same theater, the Repertory Company. In fact, it's in West Palm Beach near me, Actors Rep, it's called. And they just reopened a beautiful theater after many years. So I was an actress, and I was a mother and homemaker, and I was in retailing for a long time, doing office management in departments at Saks Fifth Avenue in Michigan. I was an art major in junior college, fashion design, and I moved into a little bit of fashion journalism, and I worked for Women's Wear Daily, which is the trade paper of retailing women's clothing. And I also moved into doing ink and watercolor pictures for kids' rooms and bathrooms. That was when my daughter was a little baby and I was home, and it was either crossword puzzles or do some artwork, and I did artwork and moved into art festivals, coordinating them pretty successfully. But I always liked to write, and I always, in school, I was always like the editor of the paper or a reporter on the school paper, and I always loved that. And I went to a boarding school, a Church of England boarding school in Toronto for the 8th through the 11th grades, and I learned more about sentence construction and writing and diagramming sentences and correct grammar from the British point of view. So there was always that kind of simmering background of that. And then the last thing I really did before going into editing was I was a water aerobics instructor at resorts and privately right here in Florida. And I loved that, but I needed something more. So I had gotten involved in Toastmasters along with my husband, and someone else in Toastmasters had written a really wonderful book, but there were some errors that I noticed, but I didn't want to tell this person. But I was looking at his website, and it was pretty awful. Punctuation, everything. And you see that a lot on websites.
Oh, yes.
So I copied it and put in my corrections and mailed it to him, snail mail. Well, I didn't hear anything for like 6 or 8 months, and I thought, oh, no, I've insulted this wonderful person. What's going to happen now? And so, well, nothing happened, but about 8 months later, I happened to see him, and he said, hey, you do some editing, don't you? I said, yes. And he said, well, I have a magazine that I'm putting together for a speakers association, and I'm wondering if you'd proofread it for me. So I proofread it for him, and he liked my work, and we developed a relationship, and I have edited books for him, and he has recommended me to other people. So it was amazing how it worked out. And so I continued to do that. If I find something wrong and I'm interested in having this person as a client, I will find fault, so to speak, and go in and let them know. And I've had very few people react in a way that it seems like they were insulted. They seem to, maybe at first, but when I explain to them that it's really just something that I do to help things improve, to help have a better web page, a better book, a better article, then they seem to understand and really appreciate it. But it's a risk.
Oh, yes. Now, that's what I call managing risk. Yes, world-class thinking, managing risk, big time. Billy Bob has got one of his favorite questions to ask you.
Well, I tell you, I'm glad I don't have to write too much because I probably get insulted all the way around, but that's okay.
No.
I don't mind it. That's how you learn. I keep talking to some of these Toastmasters, and, you know, I can never figure out, do they make the best toast, or are they grill master, or do they just make a nice, good bacon, egg, and a BLT sandwich? I don't know, you know, these Toastmasters. So how did you get so much involved in this Toastmaster? You don't sound like one, and I've already heard enough of them on our shows, but you don't sound like one. You don't act like one, in other words. I mean, that's a compliment to me.
Oh, thank you. I am kind of a maverick Toastmaster. Ask anybody in my Toastmasters club, and they probably, the most polite thing they say is that I have a quirky sense of humor. And they seem to enjoy it, though. But I am probably not typical. But I can tell you the way I got into Toastmasters, that at that time, my husband, who had been a journalist for many years, had been certified as a genealogist, and he was doing people's family histories. In fact, he did that for about 10 years.
He
loved it. He just loved it, but it's a very slow process. My husband wanted to go to Toastmasters so he could learn to speak better for the people who wanted the family histories and that wanted him to speak at their communities. And I, being a former actress, was really up for it. I thought it'd be a lot of fun, and it really has been. We've been in it now for, I think, it's 7 years.
Uh-huh. Well, I'd like to take this in a little bit different direction for a moment. This is an area of personal interest to me, too. So I'd just like to share what we can on this in the time that we have. I want to talk a little bit on the spiritual side for a minute. You have an interesting background. You're currently a congregant and staff member of the Unity of Delray Beach Church. Is that right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so you, if I understand correctly, are very much into what's called New Thought, metaphysics, unity consciousness, this kind of thing. Is this correct?
That is correct. Mm-hmm.
Would you just share briefly what this means? Because, you know, we have a lot of listeners on our show who, of course, are Christian, and there is more than one view of Christ. And if you could just take a minute and share how you chose this particular path. How were you brought up in it?
Well, I was not brought up in it. I was brought up in mainstream Protestant. The boarding school I mentioned earlier was Church of England, which is Anglican, which is Episcopal.
Mm-hmm.
And when we moved to Florida, there was one church where they had, and our daughter was 3 years old, one church where they had a Sunday school that had classes for preschool children. And it was in Palm Beach, and it was Bethesda by the Sea, a beautiful church. And so we went there for 10 years, and my daughter went all through Sunday school there and was confirmed there. And then we moved further away, and it was kind of far to get there every Sunday. So we didn't go anymore, and I actually didn't go to any church for 10 years. And I didn't like the idea of something I had to do every single Sunday in the services, and that was, I had to say I was a miserable sinner, and I wasn't miserable at all. No, that was part of my quirky humor there. The way this happened was I was in a group, it was a support group for people with eating disorders, and I'm a longtime compulsive overeater or food addict, however you want to put it. And there were all of us sitting there, and the therapist looked at me and she said, you should try unity, or we were talking about spirituality. She said, you should try unity or science of mind. She said, I think you would like it. So I tried both of them, and I was very taken with unity. You went into this sanctuary, which is Unity of Delray Beach. You just get this comforting, loving feeling. And it's hard to describe, but so many people and so many people going in there for the first time notice it. And it actually does attract a lot of people who have been in recovery for alcohol and drugs. And it attracts a lot of Catholics. And it attracts a lot of mainstream Bible Belt types who possibly they're hypersensitive or ultra-sensitive. And the strictness backfired.
That can happen, yes.
Yeah. And so unity is very gentle. And as far as Jesus, I can say what I feel about it, and that is that we learn to follow Jesus' teachings. We follow the teachings, not the man. In other words, there is no cross up on the altar. We are following what he taught. And the point is, for me, of unity is to learn to be like Jesus and like what he taught.
Yeah. I think you said that very well. I just wanted to give you the opportunity to share that point of view, because there's a lot of different ways of thinking about Jesus, and I just wanted to make sure that you had the opportunity to share that. Now, you also mentioned that you had a challenge. Billy Bob, just real quick on that, you had a question, I think, for her about a challenge that she was experiencing. I think she's already talked about it a little bit.
She did. You talked basically about a challenge you have. How did you handle a lot of your challenges today? I want to change this around on you just a little bit, if you don't mind.
Sure.
How?
Okay.
Hopefully.
Hopefully. There's one thing about me, you'll never know what I might come up with. But
well, that's why you're good at this. One reason.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you very much. Is how did you get so interesting into handicapped people? And how did you get involved with something like this in that field?
Oh, well.
I'm just curious.
All right. Okay, I'm not sure what you're referring to. The first thing that came into my head was when I was an actress, we were offered by the Association for Retarded Citizens to do puppet shows around the area. We have a huge county, and we went all over. So I was in this puppet troupe called the Kids on the Block. The point of the puppets, which were life-size, was to teach the school children that people who were different in any way were also people, and people who made good friends. And we had a puppet who had cerebral palsy. He was in a wheelchair, cute little wheelchair they had. We had a blind puppet. We had one with Down syndrome who worked in a vet animal hospital. And we had a so-called normal puppet who was kind of obnoxious. I guess that was her handicap.
That's right there.
And so I got very interested from that point of view. More recently, my daughter, who got a heart condition a few years ago, probably caused by a virus that she had when she was visiting Bali. Anyway, so she's had a heart condition for a few years. She's a runner, was a marathon runner. And last February, she had a stroke and was put in the hospital, of course, and 4 days later had a second stroke and was totally paralyzed on her right side. And, of course, I was out there the whole time and for several weeks after she came home from the hospital. This was a young lady who perfection was important to her, doing things right. And to watch her go for her exercises and do everything the doctor said, and, you know, she is my hero. As far as other things to do with handicap, there are others. Maybe there's even one of mine that I'll be willing to talk about someday.
Yeah, that's
more
where I was going with.
We were just sensing you had a special caring, a special understanding, empathy with the handicapped.
It goes beyond that, but I just don't talk about it.
Yeah, we understand
that. Yeah.
We respect that. Believe me, we do. We need to wrap this up. Just really quickly, could you just tell us in like 30 seconds or less, what is the most important thing about freedom to you? What affects your heart and soul the most?
The freedom to love, and the freedom to love everyone, and the assurance that that will never be taken away.
That is beautiful.
It sure is.
Thank you. We so much appreciate having you on the show, and we hope we'll have the opportunity to get you back. We need to wrap the show up now, and just thank you again for coming and for putting up with the little technical difficulties we had. And
well, thank you so much for having me. I love talking to you both.
Thank you. We hope to have you back.
Thanks, Sharon. Thanks, Billy Bob.
You're quite welcome. Hopefully we can talk to you again.